Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to yet another episode from New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, yet again, so much to get into as things seem to be accelerating day by day. We'll begin with an interesting one from EndTheLie.com. Putin wants Eurasian Union to compete with U.S. and European Union. Vladimir Putin recently detailed his plan to build a Eurasian Union, somewhat reminiscent of the USSR, in the Izvestia newspaper, which he aims to be able to compete with the European Union in the United States. Putin said, quote, "We are talking about a model of powerful supranational union capable of becoming one of the poles in the modern world," end quote. Putin cites the great inheritance from the Soviet Union as a foundation for the construction of a wholly new entity to challenge the European and American dominance, although he claims he is not aiming to recreate the USSR. As of now, Putin's plans lack the substance required to see any real benefits, and it seems as if he is advocating the same type of regional integration that allows crises like the massive debt crisis in Europe to occur. Even the leaders who are seen as Western opposition like Putin or Ahmadinejad all propose the same globalist policies that are destroying the sovereignty and independence of nations the world over. When it comes down to it, they're all espousing the same thing, which is the destruction of sovereignty in favor of more centralized control and planning in the hands of the elite. James, we do have one related update, but first, your take on the Eurasian Union.
Well, that analysis is exactly right, my friend. It seems that it's just a Hegelian dialectic being set up where one side is arguing for the North American Union or NATO as some sort of bloc, and the other side is arguing for a Eurasian Union and all of that. And it's the same coin. It's just two different sides, and we're being asked to choose between those two sides. Well, I don't want a piece of either of those pies. Thank you very much. I think I'll have my pie over here, which is about sovereignty and about local decentralization of power. So again, we're being set up into a false choice. And on that note, I just had a really interesting conversation with Rick Rozoff of Stop NATO International that I hope people will download from CorbettReport.com, where he notes the fact that I never really put the two together before, but it's quite obvious that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was set up just 3.5 months after NATO decided to invoke its mutual defense clause for the first time in its history in the war on Afghanistan. So very interesting to put those pieces of the puzzle together. Again, you've got NATO setting up its military imperialist alliance, and then Shanghai Cooperation Organization setting up its military imperialist alliance. And it's, again, just two sides of the same coin, and they're just arguing the exact same thing from the two different sides and setting up the false choice, which they hope we will choose from. But my only advice is not to choose either of those options.
Yeah, in so many areas, like the computer says at the end of war games, it seems like the only smart move is to not play this rigged game at all. But the related update that we have, I grabbed from the Daily Telegraph by way of blacklistednews.com, leaked document reveals Russia plans to eliminate enemies overseas. Russia gave agents license to kill enemies of the state. The Russian Secret Service authorized the elimination of individuals living overseas who were judged to be enemies of the state and ordered the creation of special units to conduct such operations, according to a document passed to the Daily Telegraph. James, can you believe Russia? Can you believe that they would actually assassinate people, their enemies of the state abroad without any, judicial oversight or evidence or court of law? I can't believe they would. Oh, wait a second. That sounds like my country, where we will kill U.S. citizens abroad without any oversight. And even though they may have dined at the Pentagon after 9/11, we'll still have teenagers who are used to playing video games kill people abroad with drones. So,
yeah, well, let me just put that one on the table for people who didn't get the reference. Anwar al-Awlaki, look it up. American citizen, never charged with any crime, never convicted of anything, never brought to trial in any way, just simply accused by the president of being affiliated with terrorists and subsequently killed. And again, now there is a presidential assassination list of American citizens, no less. I mean, it's one thing to go and assassinate citizens abroad of different countries, but to assassinate your own citizens without even so much as a trial, it's on its face the most horrific form of tyranny and imperialism, but you won't see people protesting about that.
No, you won't. And we'll, of course, we'll get to the protests in our in our third story. But this all, again, it's the false choice. And yeah, and I wonder, it's like, oh, are they going to maybe dump him in the ocean according to, you know, Muslim law? Or this also gave, you know, again, with the fake dichotomy, the fake left-right paradigm, this gave the fake conservatives the opportunity to say, see, the Bush doctrine does work. See, Obama's even using it, because, of course, they're two sides of the same coin, just as you said, James.
Right, exactly. So let's move on to story number two.
Story number two comes by way of Singularity Hub, but I have it posted on cyberspacewar.com. Supercomputer predicts revolution through culturomics. A new type of software has been shown to predict revolutions by mining news reports around the world. Retrospectively mining the news for the past 30 years, the software indicates points at which the likelihood for a revolution is high. When put to the test, bingo, the software showed spikes just before the recent Egyptian and Libyan upheavals. It was also able to sift through world news to retrospectively pinpoint Osama bin Laden's location to within 200 kilometers. In the emerging science of culturomics, that tracks cultural trends through the written word, the software was the first to demonstrate that news coverage can be used to predict future events. The software was developed by Kaylee Letaru at the University of Illinois Institute for Computing in the Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences. Looking specifically at news about Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia, Letaru's software showed compelling trends of negative tone in the decade leading up to the recent revolutions we've all come to call the Arab Spring. This may remind some folks, and we'll provide the links for you, to something called the WebBot Project, an internet bot software program that's claimed to be able to predict future events by tracking keywords entered on the internet. The WebBot Project was created in 1997, originally to predict stock market trends. James?
Well, this is a very interesting field of research, and it's very much one that's taking off in recent years with so many different programs and things that are being touted that do essentially the same thing, which is, I mean, they can call it culturomics or whatever, but it's essentially just data mining and textual analysis. And it's extremely interesting because I just did a report for the Boiling Frogs Post, the eye-opener, on InQtel, which, of course, is the CIA's venture capital firm, which basically funds technology startups. And when you start to look at their investments, they're all related to, well, a lot of them are related to this type of data mining and textual analysis. So just on a hunch, I took the name of this researcher, what is it, Kaliv Latir, whatever it is, I took the name of that researcher, dropped it into Scroogle along with CIA, and lo and behold, the CIA publishes an intelligence journal, which published one of his articles, because they're very much interested in this subject. So again, it all goes back to the intelligence agencies that are funding this type of research and then scooping up the data that comes out. And it's to a certain extent, I think it's quackery. It's all well and good to say that you pinpointed Osama to within 200 kilometers, whatever that means. I mean, go look at a map of Pakistan and see if that would have been difficult to do. And even if you believe all the Abbottabad stuff, it's all well and good to do that retrospectively, but try doing it in advance and maybe I'll be interested. But I mean, the point here really is that the intelligence agencies are funding these massive operations to scoop up tons of data and try to analyze them with these artificial intelligence systems, and it's getting to the point where it is getting quite creepy.
Now, that reminds me, I just saw something announced just in the last day or so. I don't know if it's an app or a program or what it is, but it's something called Siri, S-I-R-I. That's a new, you know, Apple thing.
Yeah.
And yep. Traces back, of course, to DARPA and the military. And I think more on that comes from Cryptogon.com. But James, I'll just throw in quickly, sort of semi-related, unrelated breaking news at this point as you and I are recording, is that Steve Jobs, co-founder of Apple, has died at the age of 56. But had you heard about the Siri/DARPA app?
I hadn't heard about DARPA being involved with that, but it doesn't surprise me in the least. And people who haven't seen Siri, I think, should check it out and find it. It's actually quite interesting that Skynet was trending on Twitter the other day, because when this was released, everyone was saying this is the implementation of Skynet. So I think people understand at a certain level that this type of technology is not necessarily an unadulterated good, and that there's a lot of very creepy things going on here. And when it's tied into the defense, military, industrial infrastructure, I think we can be pretty certain that bad things are going to come out of it.
So maybe just kind of what you alluded to there is that it's maybe not necessarily the technology that is the problem, but it's in whose hands that can become the problem. just as we may say that it's not capitalism itself that is the problem, it's who is controlling it, which takes us to our third and final story this week, James. Occupy Portland will launch tomorrow, October 6th, as I think a lot of other Occupy Wall Street protests are starting to pop up around the country. I think several others kind of begin tomorrow. We've discussed Occupy Wall Street. We discussed, you know, the Yahoo, you know, blocking the emails concerning Occupy Wall Street. And now it's going into near, you know, its third week as this continues to grow and grow and grow. And I think I will head out tomorrow here in Portland with my digital recorder and my Media Monarchy shirt and just try and roll out and maybe do some man on the street interviews. And I'm not going to bullhorn and yell at people. I'm just going to kind of ask them, you know, why they're there. But hopefully, you know, Portland can maybe muster a little more ideological consistency than some of the folks that we've maybe seen in D.C. recently. If you've seen the Adam Kokesh video talking to the Occupy D.C. protesters, quote unquote, who are essentially mouthing White House talking points and essentially saying, you know, for 4 more years, James.
Absolutely. Well, let me be clear about this. For example, the Adam Kokesh video I thought was brilliant. He did an excellent job of exposing how the people he were talking to really didn't know what they were talking about and really were just mouthing talking points. And once they were actually questioned on those talking points, they literally just walked away and said, I won't talk to you anymore. I thought that was a brilliant video for exposing that. And anyone who's listened to my podcast or any of the videos that I've done in the past on the subject of revolution knows that I am definitely want to be wary of these types of revolutionary movements, which again can be stirred up by the powers that be and directed at a system that they don't want in order to knock it down, and then the revolution can be dispersed or set against itself or can be set up for provocateuring and all of that. I'm well aware of those possibilities. But having said all of that, I am somewhat disappointed in the way that a lot of the alternative media has been so eager and so quick to dismiss the entire Occupy Wall Street movement and everything that it represents and everyone involved in it because, you know, because Soros and MoveOn.org and things like that are tied in with it. Of course the establishment is tied in with this. Of course they're going to try to take this revolutionary fervor and direct it against the people they don't want, and they're going to try to come up with the memes that they want in order to instill the programs that they want and to get White House legislation passed and all of this kind of ridiculous shenanigans that goes on. Of course that's happening, but the point to me isn't to just simply point that out and then stop. The point to me is that this is a point in time when more and more people are in a genuine state of some sort of I don't want to say revolutionary fervor, but there is a sense that there is a significant chance for change here. And to me, that's an opportunity to actually go out and educate the people who are in these protests. And I think a lot of them are actually quite educated on the facts. I think just the media, of course, is concentrating on the clueless hippies who don't have any clue about how the system's working or don't really understand what it is they're protesting. But I think there are a lot of people who are informed involved in these protests, and I think we have to be concentrating on that aspect of it. So if you want an info war, this is it. If they come out with the Occupy the Wall Street meme, we come out with Occupy the Fed. If they say tax the rich, we say that's a false paradigm and that the whole system relies on the Fed. If they come out with end the bailouts, we come out and say, well, Obama was for the bailouts. So I mean, there's a way to counteract every meme they're trying to inject here and to inject real issues. And to me, that's the point of this, to try to inject the real issues into the debate rather than simply saying, look, it's all staged, it's all provocateur, let's walk away.
So maybe just to boil it down to, you know, oft-used and abused, you know, allegory or metaphor, that it's not enough just to leave the cave and discover, hey, those shadows on the wall, it's all fake. We have to go back into the cave and tell our brothers and sisters that, hey, this is a show. These are all front men.
Right on. That's exactly it.
So, like I said, there is an Occupy Portland Facebook page. It, as I last looked at it just a few minutes ago, it already has 8,700 plus members. So, like I said, I'm going to head out tomorrow. So, folks should keep an eye out on the MediaMonarchy.com feed for some exclusive interviews and coverage of Occupy Portland.
All right, I'm definitely looking forward to that, and I'm trying to make some contacts with people who are involved in New York and other places to see if I can get some reporting on the ground. But at any rate, I certainly hope people are out there and trying to get involved with this and trying to shape it into what we want to see rather than just waiting for it to turn into what we don't want to see. On that note, I guess we'll end it there. James, thank you again, as always.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.